Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
To Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. It's great to be back. We were off for a week, but we are back and raring to go. Hope everybody had a great week. And, of course, TGIF, we are all extraordinarily glad it's Friday. I know that I am. And, gosh, there's a lot going on, especially, you know, everything with the latest of it, with everything going on in Boston. We're going to get to all that. Got a really great soundbite from a freshman Arkansas congressman that, I'm telling you what, we need more like him. You know, the latest on the Boston bombing suspects, tell you what, this family is like, gosh, I don't know. They're kind of like the Father Knows Best family, only Chechen style. You got mom, who was revealed today, that apparently mom is also a person of interest in this investigation. And not only is mom a person of interest in the investigation, but mom was also herself on a terror watch list. You know, maybe it's like a Chechen thing. It's a Russian thing. They want to keep it all in the family. It's, you know, it could be a cultural thing. You don't know. It's something different. But so mom apparently is going to have the FBI on her back for a while because they are investigating just exactly how much influence, just exactly how influential she was in the radicalization of her son. And well, I'm sure we're going to be finding out more about that in the coming days. And it seems also we know that Jokar Tsarnaev, the 19-year-old surviving suspect, the one who didn't run over his brother in his attempt to escape, he was moved today from the hospital that he was being treated at in Boston to a kind of a prison hospital. And so he will be spending some time there while they interrogate him some more and try to find out just exactly what the whole plan these guys were planning on carrying out. We all know, of course, that Tsarnaev is not going to be tried as an enemy combatant, and he was read his Miranda rights. And the thing with that is that anything that he may have said before the reading of those Miranda rights, anything that he has said is not, since the reading of those rights, is not admissible in court. However, anything that he said prior to that, to my knowledge, can be used. So that may make things a little bit interesting. So, and you know, there's been a lot of debate on should we prosecute him as an enemy combatant, or because of the fact that he is, in fact, whether we like it or not, the fact that he is an American citizen, that we do need to read his Miranda rights and prosecute him as such, as an American citizen, as a citizen of this country, with the rights that we are all endowed with. And, you know, when I first heard about this, I said the same thing. I said, you know what? I think that when you bomb a major American city with the intent on killing as many people as possible, I think that whether or not you're an American citizen, I think when you undertake that endeavor, that you give up your rights a little bit as an American citizen if you're planning to blow up your fellow citizens. But the more I read and the more I heard, you know, the thing with freedom and the thing with liberty is sometimes it's not neat and tidy. Sometimes it is a little messy. And if we all want our own rights as American citizens to be protected and to be not taken away from us at any given time, you know, if we want our own rights to be kept intact, sometimes, even though it's a disgusting, despicable, horrible thing, we have to keep the rights of those other American citizens, even though they did despicable, horrible, awful things. They are, bottom line, whether we like it or not, and at this point nobody likes it, but whether we like it or not, this kid is an American citizen. And so we have to treat him as such. And I don't think anybody likes it. I'm not crazy about it myself, but again, like I said, when it comes to freedom and liberty, sometimes you have to take the good with the bad. And one of the best people I heard immediately following the attacks in Boston on this subject was on Fox News with Judge Andrew Napolitano. And I'm a big fan of Judge Napolitano's. He's a brilliant guy, and he's a walking law encyclopedia, I think. And he laid out the argument for this so well. And if anybody gets a chance to listen to him speak on this subject, please do so. Stop and take a minute and stop and listen to him speak on this topic. But we also found out this week that the Flying Tsarnaev brothers, well, they were also welfare recipients. How does everyone like that? Try that one on for size and see how that one fits. You and I, getting up and schlepping off to work every morning, you and I were paying for these two Nimrods to live off the public dole, and in their spare time when they were not working and they were living off your dime and mine, they were spending all of their spare time on the internet learning how to build bombs. Isn't that special? Isn't that great? I personally love knowing that I can get up in the morning and I can go to work and support these guys and guys like them. Isn't that great? But, so that was found out this week that at some time or other, apparently this whole family was losers and living on public assistance. The older brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, he and his wife and their three-year-old daughter, I don't think anybody's going to have a quibble with the child, but what a guy, that Tamerlan. While Tamerlan was at home with all of his radical jihadi buddies, surfing the web and learning how to make bombs, his poor wife, Catherine, was working as a home health aide up to 80 hours a week. And, you know, what kind of guy does that? Well, a terrorist is the kind of guy that does that, if he in fact has a wife. And, you know, I don't think we know very much at this point what she knew, if she knew anything at all, and if so, what she did know. And I'm sure that she is going to be questioned extensively about any information that she may have regarding her husband's activities. But one of the other prominent members of the family immediately following the attack, and as soon as we found out who these guys were their uncle, whose name is Ruslan Tsarnaev. And Ruslan doesn't mince words. Uncle Ruslan was very outspoken about what he thought should happen. He encouraged his nephews to turn themselves in. And of course, we know that they did not. Another question about the Flying Tsarnaev brothers' public assistance chapter in their lives is how much of your money and mine not only went to these guys surfing the web all day while the elder brother's wife worked 80 hours a week, how much of my taxpayer money and yours went to funding their hobby, shall we say, funding their radicalism and funding their own personal jihad. You know what? It's one of those things. It might be one of those things that you're better off not knowing. So that was interesting. But like I said, there's a great clip that I have here. It was on the floor of Congress here, and this is Representative Tom Cotton, and he is a freshman congressman from Arkansas, and he made a little observation. Let's listen.
I rise today to express grave doubts about the Obama administration's counterterrorism policies and programs. Counterterrorism is often shrouded in secrecy, as it should be. So let us judge by the results. In barely 4 years in office, five jihadists have reached their targets in the United States under Barack Obama. The Boston Marathon bomber, the underwear bomber, the Times Square bomber, the Fort Hood shooter, and in my own state, the Little Rock recruiting office shooter. In over 7 years after 9/11, under George W. Bush, how many terrorists reached their target in the United States? Zero. We need to ask, why is the Obama administration failing in its mission to stop terrorism before it reaches its targets in the United States? Thank you.
Yeah, good question. After 9/11, under George Bush's watch, and we'll get to the opening of the George Bush Library here in a second, after 9/11 and throughout the remainder of his presidency, we had no other attacks, but there were hundreds of them that were thwarted that no one knew about. And as Congressman Cotton just told us, there have been five so far under Barack Obama's watch that have more or less hit the mark and hit their target. So I think we've got to be asking ourselves, what exactly is the Obama administration doing to keep this country safe? Because whatever they're doing doesn't appear to be working. And so I think we need to do a little bit more probing. Hopefully Congress will decide that they also want some more answers to these questions, and that maybe they will do a little probing on their own. And also, while we're talking about terrorism here, 12 years after 9/11, this is from the Yahoo News service. This happened on Wednesday. A piece of landing gear believed to be from one of the commercial airplanes that crashed into the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, has been discovered wedged between two lower Manhattan buildings. The piece of landing gear found in a narrow alleyway behind 51 Park Place and 50 Murray Street in Manhattan's financial district includes a, quote, clearly visible Boeing identification number. It says a piece of landing gear here wedged in between these two buildings was about 5 feet high and about 3 feet wide. And this is by far the biggest remnant, I think, that has been found recently. But nearly 12 years after two commercial airlines smashed into two Manhattan skyscrapers, destroying them and killing nearly 3,000 people, city officials continue to turn up debris from the attack and identify human remains. It will be up to New York City's medical examiner office to determine whether to sift the soil around the site where the landing gear was found for more evidence. This month, the medical examiner's office said 39 possible human remains were discovered in 9/11 debris hauled years ago to the New York City borough of Staten Island. Since 2006, the painstaking work has led to 34 new positive identifications of victims. But with that, our president has our president cannot seem to manage to choke out the words Islamic terrorists. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. Glad you're here. Going to take a break. Be back in a minute. Hang around.
You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
And we're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble, TGIF. I'm sure we all have that feeling about right now. Thank God it's Friday, and what happens on Friday nights but Conservative Cauldron Radio? And where else would you be but sitting right here listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio? And I'm so happy that you are. I was just reading part of a Yahoo News story about part of a landing gear being found wedged in between two buildings in Manhattan that they believe to be from one of the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center towers on September 11, 2001, nearly 12 years later. And we're still finding debris from the carnage that these people left behind. And so with that thought in mind, that just 2 days ago, they found a portion of landing gear from one of these planes on a morning that 3,000 of our fellow citizens were murdered. Let's take a listen to what our old buddy, because he's such a wealth of information for those of us that do this kind of thing. Chris Matthews, this is what he thinks.
I've never understood, and I know this is sounds perhaps too sympathetic, what are these dictators supposed to do? What was Mubarak supposed to do? Did we give him an exit strategy? Look, we're going to take you down to some place where you can be. Are the Russians going to accept Assad? The ideal solution is Assad goes to Russia, this thing's over. That's the deal. Go in the summertime when it's nice at least. Then go somewhere else. But you got to get them out of the country to bring this regime down unless you annihilate them. And I don't know whether the United States wants to go in there and bring down that regime by force of our arms. That means troops on the ground. I don't think we want to do that.
And yet, Chris, the truth is Assad has given absolutely zero indication of a willingness to go anywhere. This is a man whose 70,000 of his own people have already been killed.
Well, what's your solution?
Well, thankfully, I'm not in a position to offer that. I think I'm in agreement with you.
Back to you. As they say, throw it back to New York, to you. I think this is unless you're willing to take moral responsibility for the country. And what happens to, we watched this gory hanging, this absurd hanging of Saddam Hussein while these thugs that went about this thing on television. We watched it on our watch because of us. We gave them the power to do that to the guy. Okay, you start making big-time moral decisions like that, saying, oh, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. I think it's very dangerous. I have to admit, I'm a Vietnam-era guy. I'm always suspicious of foreign involvement. 9 out of 10 times, I say the best move is to let them solve their own problems. In the end,
as horrible as that may be, as long as Syrians are fighting Syrians, that's better than us fighting Syrians. And by the way, if we don't stop killing Arabs on international television one of these days, that's all we do is kill Arabs on international television. We don't fight Africans. We don't fight Europeans. Who do we fight? Islamic people on international television. I think that might have something to do with jihad. Just guessing.
You know, Cook, if all else fails, blow America first, because it always works for you, doesn't it? And, you know, when Chris Matthews says, I'm a Vietnam-era guy, that is basically all you need to know about Chris Matthews. He is a Vietnam-era guy, and that speaks volumes. So that's what Chris thinks that we are doing overseas, is just going around killing Arabs. Thanks, Chris. I don't know which one of those guys. And, you know, now that I think of it, no, I do know, it is Chris, that both of these guys, he and Martin Bashir both of them are dumb as a bag of hair. And, you know, it really doesn't need any more commentary than what you just heard. But moving along, Thursday was the dedication of the George W. Bush Presidential Library on the campus of Southern Methodist University down in Dallas. And, of course, we had all living former U.S. presidents there. We had Jimmy Carter. We had George H.W. Bush. We had Bill Clinton. We had Barack Obama. And, of course, George W. Bush. And it's interesting to note that George Bush's approval rating has gone up in the last 4 or 5 years. Gee. I can't imagine why. Why would that be? Anyway, there was a lot of people there. A lot of people showed up. It's been a good month for George. George has gotten a library and a granddaughter. So it's been a pretty good month for him. You know, and I think, and a lot of people, I think, also think that George Bush is going to be remembered in history very well when all is said and done. And one of the things I found that I really wanted to read here, I'm hoping that I have enough time here to do this, is a column by Peggy Noonan this week in the Wall Street Journal. And Peggy Noonan was one of those, quote, air quote, conservatives who drank the Kool-Aid in 2008 and thought that maybe Barack Obama wouldn't be so bad. Well, Peggy's talking about a little something called Obama fatigue this week. And one of the things that she says was that Barack Obama was elected president in 2008 because he was not George W. Bush. In fact, he was elected because he was the furthest thing possible from Mr. Bush. On some level, he knew this, which is why every time he got in trouble, he'd say Bush's name. It's all his fault. You have no idea the mess I inherited. As long as Mr. Bush's memory was hovering like Boo Radley in the shadows, Mr. Obama would be okay. This week, something changed. George W. Bush is back for the unveiling of his presidential library. His numbers are dramatically up. You know why? Because he's the furthest thing from Barack Obama. My, what goes around comes around. I think that Barack Obama is finding out, as most, both myself and my fellow pagans both know, is that sometimes karma is a bitch. But it says here also, in all of his recent interviews, Mr. Bush has been modest, humorous, proud but unassuming, and essentially philosophical. History will decide. No finger pointing or scoring points. If he feels rancor or resentment, he doesn't show it. He didn't attempt to manipulate. His sheer normality seemed like a relief, an echo of an older age. And one of the things in this, if you get a chance, this is a really great piece by Peggy Noonan called The Presidential Wheel Turns. And like I said, it is on the Wall Street Journal page, and they were talking a little bit about arrogance in a president, and it says that, I can't find it here, but actually it really is a good piece, and I would encourage everyone to read it. It basically is saying that George W. Bush has shown a lot of class since he's left office, and it's not something that has been seen a whole lot of lately. The press, interestingly enough, covered most of this for most of Thursday. And even Jimmy Carter managed to, you know, say a few nice things about George W. Bush, which is not his habit usually of doing. Bill Clinton is always as good at these kinds of things. He comes along and smiles and backslaps everyone and says, can't we all just get along? But it was kind of a testament to, I think that people had, we were so busy trying to get the anti-George Bush in Barack Obama that now that we have him, we're not quite sure what we want to do with him. One of the things here, it says, President Obama was more formal than the other speakers and less confident than usual, as if he knew he was surrounded by people who have something he doesn't. No matter how much you think you're ready to assume the office of the president, it's impossible to understand the nature of the job until it's yours. This is a way of seeming to laud others when you're lauding yourself. He veered into current policy disputes using Mr. Bush's failed comprehensive immigration reform to buttress his own efforts. That was manipulative, graceless, and typical. George W. Bush was emotional. In the end, leaders are defined by the convictions they hold, he said. My deepest conviction is that the United States of America must strive to expand the reach of freedom. I believe that freedom is a gift from God and the hope of every human heart. He then announced that on Saturday he would personally invade Syria, which is kind of funny. But I think that having hindsight and being able to be armchair quarterback, in a sense, that maybe more people are now seeing than ever before just what a classy guy that George W. Bush is, and through all of Barack Obama's blaming and all of the things that he has said about George W. Bush, that it hasn't helped him any. In the end here, back to the point, what was nice was that all of them, Bush family, the Carters, and Clinton, seemed like the old days, the way we were. They were full of endurance, stamina, effort, also flaws, frailty, mess, but they weren't creepy. Anyway, onward to Obama fatigue and the Democratic Party wrestling with what comes next. It's not only the Republicans in a deep pit. And that is completely, nothing could be further from, is completely true. Everybody wants to point to rancor and divisiveness within the Republican Party. And I think come 2016, there is going to be a whole bunch of it in the Democratic Party. But it's going to be interesting to see. I'm sure everybody's going to be contemplating until then whether or not Hillary is going to decide to throw her hat in the ring. A lot of people seem to be convinced that she is going to do it. I think maybe once she's had a couple of years rest up there in Chappaqua away from the limelight, that maybe she'll get that itch again to throw her hat in the ring. Anyway, that's about all I got for tonight. I want to thank you guys all for being here. I'm glad everybody could be here. What would Friday night be without Conservative Cauldron Radio? I will tell you that you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/BeckyNoble. You can also find me at Where It All Started at www.theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please go there and get up to date on all the latest stuff that is there, all of the latest postings. And please look for me on examiner.com. And I think that's about all the places. Oh, what was I thinking? You can also find me on Twitter at Patriot Witch. So anyway, that's about it. I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. And I'm sure we're going to be talking more next week about immigration, more on the Boston bombers, and a whole bunch of other things. So please join me again next week. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.